Hello. Whoa. Hi. Thank you so much for coming. I was talking to some folks earlier, and I said this would be, it's worth it for me to talk to you even if just one person came. So I strongly believe in talking more about our justice system and some of the issues that, you know, are a part of the justice system and some of the ways that we can all get involved. So I travel, I've done this with my family, so just know if you have interest in these subjects or in other subjects, because I do higher ed and prison work, that's going to be my focus post-Holden. You can always let me know and I can be in email contact with anybody for if you're interested in anything. So I'm going to talk here about a tiny part of a whole system that I learned about in the last 5 years or so, and that's the phenomenon of false and coerced confessions during police interrogations. And so I will get started, but I'm also quite interested, I'm going to skip a few slides because I want to leave some time for your questions, for your comments, for things that you want to add to the conversation. So we will do that at the end. I also want you to know that this is really my stance. And sometimes I get very passionate about things. I might, you know, who knows where I'll go in terms of the sort of emotional register of the talk. But the passion that I have is for justice. And it is about love and not hate. And so thank you to Martin Luther King Jr. For reminding us of how to stick with love. Okay. So for a little bit of context, probably you know, but the United States incarcerates more people than any other country on Earth. We have 5% of the world's population, and we have 20% of the world's incarcerated people. One out of five prisoners in the world is incarcerated in the U.S. We have a mass incarceration problem. It is the first resort, not the last resort, for criminal activity of all kinds, not just violent activity. Very often judges, in fact, have to explain why they don't send someone to prison rather than why they do. We would be remiss to think that this is about other people. This conversation is about all of us. It especially affects families and communities of color, and that's a huge and important thing for us to work towards when we're working towards justice in the sense of systemic racism, right? When I do this locally, I want to make sure that my students in Rock Island, Illinois, sleepy Rock Island, Illinois, know that every state, there are systems everywhere, but certainly even in Rock Island, right, we had information on the state of Illinois and Rock Island County jails. When I use jail and prison, I will talk about jails being where you go when you're charged. You're not convicted, right? That's when you're awaiting trial. There are loads of people who are interested in stopping cash bond because there are people who go to jail never having been convicted of a crime because they cannot raise $300, $1,000, whatever it is. They sit in jail, sometimes for years. And so if you have heard of Caliph Browder or some other, there are some horrifying stories that eventually have led to some change in some states. But we have different systems in lots of different states, and so sometimes it's hard to coalesce and make positive change when we have this integrated system, but also pockets. I mean, every institution that I've been in, which is very small, I'm new to this work, right? But it could be run with different sorts of rules depending on who the warden is, right? In any event, we have prisons bursting at the seams all over the country. prison system in crisis. It's the new institution for the mentally ill, right? It's also the new quote unquote poorhouse, because that's who's in prison. Not exclusively, but we're now sort of riding on these decades of systems that make it quite easy to go to prison. That starts to affect communities that it wasn't intended to affect. Like Tim Wise says, don't be surprised. Tim Wise is a white anti-racist educator who says to white folks, don't be surprised when the violence that, you know, besets poor communities walks into your community, right? Because if we haven't done anything about that, you know, it's not going to just stay separated out, right? Like, so in any event, we have a whole system that really is in crisis. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about for-profit prisons. They are not the majority of prisons, but they do make billions of dollars for those shareholders who are in a for-profit prison system. Also, if you're interested in immigration, some of the same corporations that some of the same corporate it's right here in my eye. Yeah, it's right, sorry, in my eye. Can you hear me without it? Probably much better with, isn't it? Okay, I'll just deal with it. Pardon me if it... I'm shaking my head a little bit so I can see you. The for-profit prison industry, some of the same corporations that gain billions of dollars are also working at the border with ankle monitors and other sorts of technology with undocumented folks coming into the United States. In any event, I can take some questions about that as I can at the end if you're interested in some of that. So the small part that I'm focusing in on is this phenomenon of false and coerced confessions and how that happens. 95% of felony convictions in the United States are obtained through guilty pleas. They never see a trial. They plead guilty because they see no other recourse. One of the ways that happens, that 95% of people say, I'm not going to go in front of a trial, I'm not going to go, you know, I'd rather not have a trial. I mean, we know about overworked prosecutors, or public defenders, right, who will encourage their clients. I mean, I believe public defenders will do the absolute best they can. But if you're serving too many people, you might encourage them to take a guilty plea if you think that's in their best interest. And so, in any event, part of the guilty plea problem.org, if you're interested, is the phenomenon of false and coerced confessions. So guilty plea problem is part of the Innocence Network. So if you're familiar with the Innocence Project or the Innocence Networks, every state has an Innocence Network, and those are lawyers and, I mean, all kinds of folks who work together to try to find a more balanced, just system in the front part of the criminal justice system. You can also find through searches, and since Illinois is my context, and it's also the birthplace of the interrogation technique that I'm gonna talk to you about, I do not believe that a lot of people in the system are necessarily intending to coerce confessions. We know it has happened. We know it happens now. And there's amazing evidence about true coercion that's abusive, right? And certainly Chicago is at the forefront of that. If anybody's seen this brand new documentary, Ava DuVernay's When They See Us, just out in 2019, then I'm not going to show that trailer because we're having downloading things. But this is the story of the, quote, Central Park Five, or the now they're the Exonerated Five. These now men were boys convicted of assaulting and attempting to murder the Central Park jogger. I grew up hearing this story. Only they spent many years in prison for a crime they didn't commit. They were 15 years old, 16 years old, 17 years old, parents not informed, all kinds of stuff happened. And that is an incredibly important documentary, and I think and has won awards already and is like one of the most, you know, watched Netflix documentary series. Has anybody seen it? Okay, it's worth it. And it tells the story of these boys. They didn't know each other. Two of them knew each other, but they mostly didn't know each other. They had nothing to do with this crime. One of them could not read, and and didn't know what he was signing. I mean, all of this stuff. This is absolute abuse in a worst case scenario. But it happened a lot, enough so that if it was your loved one, you only needed to happen once, right? But it. Families and lives were just devastated by this experience, and Ava DuVernay really did a beautiful job with that documentary. Usually, I show two videos. I'm going to start with the 60 Minutes, and this is the only one I'm going to show right now, just for a number of reasons. And so this is a bit of 60 Minutes explanation. That's not it. Isn't it under? I will have.
Oh, I bet I kept running from your previous. Sometimes it goes, it's just kind of like a wormhole. Yeah, try that.
There's no back on the.
I can always go back to it. I can keep talking and then go.
This
back.
Question is, did this download?
Well, Jonah does his magic. Oh, there it is.
Okay. So it's not on. I'll just stop that.
Shall we talk a little bit about that first? Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
So for the jury, it's what a reasonable person could presume. But apparently, for that woman,
people,
there's nothing reasonable about it.
Believe confessions. And even in the case of DNA, like all of this stuff, like it is, juries convict on confessions. And I mean, and there's no, like, you don't know. And so a defense attorney could say, if you confessed, you better plead. And so people plead guilty, sometimes to the same crime, sometimes to a negotiated lower crime, right? Case closed. Boom, 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 boom.
But if there's a confession, do they still go to a jury?
95% of federal cases there never see a trial. Very few people who get charged with a crime go to trial. We have a system that is massive and overbooked and understaffed, and there's a lot of pressure to get through cases, right? No, this is a huge problem.
I'm wondering what kind of, are there examples or precedents set for the interrogators being held responsible?
No.
Okay.
Interrogators are not held responsible. And in fact, and that's one of the calls, but how do you begin to do that? So the interrogation technique is what I'm going to explain about next, that was involved in these men's confessions and in lots of confessions, right? And so, but no, they're not held accountable at all, period, because they leave it behind and they're like, it's yours now, it's the court's now, it's the lawyer's now, and it just goes. And the only story told, okay, in the video they said, you don't see, when you get the charges, all you see are the charges. You don't see the 17-year-old crying in the room for 12 hours and told that he'll go home or whatever. You don't see any of that. You see just the charges. And the charges says they confessed to this, that, and that. That's what shows up in the headlines, right? With no context. How long you sit in the, I mean, like, yeah, there's, it's amazing. I read headlines really differently now. But these men, thank God, eventually were cleared. But this was 2016. And this is not an unusual phenomenon. Any more before I go on?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, and I assume that when they're exonerated, nobody apologizes and there's
no
compensation for the last 20 years of their life that they spent in jail unfairly.
Right.
There's
nothing. Rarely.
Nothing.
There are cases, most people get nothing.
Can't they sue?
Yes, and they do.
Suit? Can they sue the,
yes,
the police department?
Sometimes they do.
Oh, okay.
There's a young man, actually, a Rock Island man.
That costs money.
It costs money.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee, and different states have different sort of caps or restrictions, or, you know, so there are some states that have started doing, that have started compensating for unjust cases, but imagine how long it takes to prove that, right? And so you get your innocence, I mean, like, you get out of prison, you're lucky if you get exonerated, and then if you have a criminal record, finding a job, finding an apartment, like, and the billions of dollars made on your incarceration, there's actually a lot of incentive to keep our prisons full. For-profit prisons have contracts with the federal government that say they get, they're guaranteed occupancy. For-profit prisons have contracts with the federal government where they are guaranteed occupancy. Different states, again, there's some folks, the Innocence Projects, the Innocence Networks are coming around and doing a lot of really good work, but it is slow going. But a lot of the cases that have been able to be, of people exonerated after they had confessed to a crime they didn't commit, they had DNA evidence. And so the Innocence Project lawyers would work pro bono. You know, Brian Stevenson, if you've read his book, Just Mercy, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. But there are angels who are lawyers and who are working to help, you know, bit by bit, right some of these wrongs.
Did these boys actually physically write the confessions?
No, they signed them, though.
Somebody else wrote them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Would have thought they would have gotten their story straight between the...
No, and that's the thing. But again, the confessions aren't usually... I mean, there's no trial. There's nobody to look at them.
Yeah.
The charges are, here's the charges. The person confessed. I mean, there could be paperwork for the person, you know, for people to delve into, but they don't. Okay? And it is... Yeah. So, guilty plea problem... .org has story after story after story. It's a good website too, so if you're interested, please do go there. Other questions before I move on?
Well, they don't have time. They don't mean to
right.
say that glibly and think, well, they just didn't have time to get the job done right. But there's a stack of cases on their desk.
Yeah. So we over incarcerate, certainly, as you know. But we also incarcerate for longer. So we incarcerate more people for longer periods of time than any other country on earth. I have lots of examples of things. I'm going to skip to a few things. So this happened to my daughter. In July of 2013, my then 22-year-old daughter was charged with a violent crime she did not commit, a Class X felony of breaking a baby's legs. And she and her girlfriend, Jennifer, were interrogated for this crime. And I'm just going to go over this really quickly because this is part of the personal testimony, but it's not the point of my presentation. So I'll tell you a little bit about it, and I'm happy to answer absolutely any questions you have, but I'm going to move on after this, okay? So July of 2013, my daughter was jailed and charged with a Class X felony for breaking a little 15-month-old baby's legs. They were one of multiple people who were babysitting this child. The child's grandmother, another guy who was just out of prison and in the house, had babysit her, but I don't think Brad had anything to do with it. But Indy and Jen, they babysat. Something was up with the toddler. And her mother took her to a hospital. So over this 2-day period, multiple people babysat. Something's up with the daughter, with this little girl. People later said maybe somebody gave her some pain medication. She was out of it. She was really, lethargic. Mom took her to the hospital. She had a knot on her head. The hospital gave her aspirin. Next day, baby's still not better. Mom took her to another hospital. Doctors found 2 broken legs. Called the police. The detective interviewed 3 people. Brad for 15 minutes. Dorothy, my daughter, and Jen for 2 hours. Separately. And the police arrested my daughter a few days later. $100,000 bond. So, Dorothy's okay now. She's only okay because her father and I paid $50,000 for a lawyer. That's the only reason. Otherwise, she would be in prison now. This was the case summary. Aggravated battery to a child. The Moline Police Department received a report of possible child abuse at Trinity East Hospital. The hospital advised 15-month-old child had been seen at a different hospital the day before. On today's date, the victim was in the emergency room with 2 broken legs. Defendant Varalo Spikin stated the injuries had occurred while she was changing the victim's diaper. So there's the case summary. In the interrogation room, I won't go back there yet. Well, that's all anybody needed to know, right? And so the papers said Moline woman broke her legs. What I don't have with me, and I wish I had had the foresight to bring with me, was her father and I put her interrogation, which the lawyer gave to us, which is unusual. Most people do not have access to the interrogation tape. He gave it to us. We had it condensed to 20 minutes because we were thinking we might go to trial, right? And so we had it condensed to 20 minutes where you hear her say over and over, I didn't do anything. I didn't hurt that child. She was laying on my stomach. And you see the detective, who was also female, we see the detective saying, well, we know the baby got hurt in your care. Because one, it's legal for them to lie to you, right? When you're being interrogated, you need to know it is absolutely legal and practiced for the interrogator to lie to you. But people who are naive, innocent, or just not educated, don't always know that, and they believe it. So she was told over and over again by the interrogator, we know the baby was hurt in your care. And you see Dorothy saying, I don't know what I did. And I don't, if I did, then I'll take responsibility for it, but I don't think I did. Interrogator brings in a baby doll, says, did you change your diaper? Maybe. You know, did you do it? Would you do it like this? Because it would need force. And Dorothy said, maybe I did, but this is how I do it. You know, I take one hand and I clean her butt. And the interrogator says, no, you would need two hands. You know, you would to break a baby's legs, changing their diaper. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, right? Anyone who's changed a diaper knows, like, how would you do that? All the headlines. Case summary, boom. She said she broke the baby's legs, changing the diaper. And she twisted and bent the infant's legs. Lee said toddler's legs broke during diaper change, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That didn't go over well, of course. There was lots of ugliness. I'll skip some of that. This is the technique that was used, and this is the technique that's used in most states around this country today. It is still practiced in some of my area, and it is likely practiced in yours. And I would suggest you find out. But if not, then there's things that we can all do, and some of it is knowing it, and some of it is invoking your right not to speak without a lawyer present. Everybody needs to do that. So I'll start with that. I'm going to say that like 900 times. The Reed technique of police interrogation is, there's multiple stories I can give you if you're interested, right? Has influenced nearly every aspect of modern police interrogations. And so this is a New Yorker story, as you can see. And I'll tell you a little bit about how it works. So the Reed technique is when you don't have to use physical violence, but you can manipulate persuasion. Like it's a technique that in the end is designed to get you to say something. It's not designed to gather information from you. It's designed to get you to confess. That's the whole point. The creators of this method did not do, I mean, they were not, they're a company. They're people who design this. To me, it feels like mafia techniques. It's just, it's professional persuasion. Designed to confuse you. So if you're trained in the Reed technique, you're trained to talk over people, to get them flustered. You're trained to, one thing they do is say, offer people three options for what happens if they do confess and make it seem like it's not a big deal. So in my daughter's case, the interrogator said, now, I mean, if you do say you did it, I mean, like, there will be consequences. I'm not going to tell you there won't be consequences. I don't know if it will be, it might be a fine, or it might be a class, or I'm not sure what it'll be. One, two, three. It makes it sound like if you sign here, nothing that terrible is going to get, you know, is going to happen to you, and you can get out of this room. And so a lot of times people feel like the truth will win out. And so over and over and over again, people who sign, who do falsely confess, or confess under coercion, there's a point, like, what do you call coercion? You invoked your Miranda rights. I mean, you didn't invoke your Miranda rights. You went ahead and freely spoke, right? It doesn't matter if you don't really understand that. You freely spoke, right? And it's designed to get you to say, yes, I did.
So I have a question. Sorry if I'm interrupting. When do you have the opportunity to get a lawyer to be present during your questioning?
You have to say at any time. You put your head down.
I want a lawyer.
You can say it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I don't talk without a lawyer. Over and over and over again. Put your head down. I don't talk without a lawyer. I mean, you have to tell them who you are. You have to, you know, so you have to identify yourself. But there's almost nothing beyond that that you have to do. That is true if somebody asks for you to search your pockets. It is true if somebody comes up to you, but they don't. Their tone of voice doesn't make it sound like you have the option. Like, for example, if I say, "Could I look in your pockets, please?" And I'm a police officer. Can I look in your pockets? People don't always think they have a choice. It doesn't feel like they have a choice. I'd like to see what's in your pockets. I mean, it doesn't seem voluntary, right? I'm not scary enough, but you get the idea, right? And so this has been an interrogative practice around this country for decades. Other questions? Yes.
Isn't there an availability of a lawyer if you can't
Yes, but
public defender.
Yeah, if you can't afford it, yes.
Yeah.
You can.
Because of Miranda rights,
that's right.
Everyone gets the right to a lawyer.
That is correct.
Even though a public defender isn't always the best choice.
Right. A huge percentage of people do not request it. And so, especially if you're naive, you're innocent, you're not versed in the ways of the system, you get confused, people get tired, they don't get, so over and over if you're pounded. And if you're a person who's just not strong, I mean, it just was that my daughter was the weakest link. That's all. She folded. And we all love lots of people at various times of their lives. They could or they could. I mean, So the practice, so talking over you, making it sound like it won't be so bad, making it sound like it was an accident. I won't, you don't want me to say anything bad to your friends, you don't want me to say anything bad about you, or why aren't you complying, I know it was an accident, right? I'm not going to say anything bad about you. It was just an accident. Of course, you probably feel terrible about it and you don't want to sign. There's all kinds of, it's manipulation. The Reed technique works. These are quotes from their website, from the Reed Technique Institute. You can pay and go get trained. Satisfaction. 95% of folks who got trained in the Reed technique reported that using that improved their confession rate. Over half said they increased their confession rate by more than 25%. Almost a quarter said they increased their confession rate as much as 50%. And 97% reported that using that increased their case resolution. Boom, boom, boom. Here's the problem. It does work. It works on guilty people and innocent people.
So this company sells their services,
yes,
to police departments. They offer their services. They come in. They do it in service to,
yep,
teach the detectives how to use the Reed.
All over this country.
And the stockholders love it.
So a justice journalist did a story with my family, and she contacted the Reed technique representative and asked what research they had. And they would not respond to her, requests. It's not built on solid research. It works. I have people tell me the Reed technique is the gold standard of police interrogation. Well, it isn't anymore. Some communities are choosing not to engage with the Reed technique, and you have every right to ask your police department what their interrogation techniques are. I live in the Quad Cities in Illinois. Davenport and Bettendorf, Iowa, Rock Island and Moline, Illinois. One of those, their police department no longer engages with the Reed technique. They decided they're going to not use that technique for interrogation. Which city? If you're familiar with Quad Cities, it's Bettendorf. That is the wealthiest. It probably had more people who were aware and activated, and I don't know, but all I'm saying is that Rock Island, Moline, and Davenport are by far more diverse racially and less wealthy by a lot. In any event, NPRs, good cop, beyond good cop, bad cop. Sometimes people told me the interrogator who interrogated my daughter was a good person. I mean, maybe she is. Perhaps she is. And maybe it was just tunnel vision. I don't need, regardless, she did this and it was somebody else's problem. 80% of people do not invoke their Miranda rights. They do not say, I want a lawyer, I won't talk without a lawyer, I won't talk without a lawyer. You need to do that. Of course, I feel like we should cooperate, of course, generally. But if you are taken into a station and you are being interrogated, put your head down and say, please, put your head down and say, I need a lawyer. What you say, because this confession trumps everything. What you say cannot help you. It will never help you. It will only hurt you. Period. So this is kind of a Holden story because I was here at Holden in 2014, just a few months after this happened. And but 2 years, more than 2 years later, trial date delays, all kinds of things, all kinds of settlement offer we made. She ended up pleading guilty to a misdemeanor battery charge. Everybody knew she was innocent. I mean, come on. Misdemeanor battery? A baby with, you know, a toddler with broken legs? But the case was done. So she is now at the point where she was, expungible. Sorry, I'm getting my words mixed up. Expungible. And, I mean, this is like, the best case scenario story, although we were in hell for 2.5 years. And it cost us so much. It cost her mostly, but also, that's my daughter. And the ripple effects of that, I cannot begin to share with you the cost of it. She's been turned down for jobs a lot. And I'm not saying, you know, anyway, lots of stuff.
Is she still a felon?
No.
You said expunged.
And it was a misdemeanor that she pled guilty to. Don't Google her name. But if you did Google her name, like employers still, sometimes also the background checks will come back with charges, not just with convictions. And so it follows you for life. And she has resources. I mean, like it took all my savings. And, but she's okay, but we will never be okay. And we can talk about it. We're okay now. But you know what's not okay is that this happens to anybody. And this is the thing that I wanted to share with you. Another thing I want to share with you is that, okay, so blah, 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 she pled guilty. My ex-husband, my Jay, has a master's degree. My brother has a master's degree and I have a PhD. When we went to testify a week after she was arrested, initial bond was $100,000. And when we went in to talk to the judge about the bond, the bail, the bond hearing, we all had to testify on her behalf. My brother went in uniform. He was in the Navy. He's in California. He flew from California to come out and be with us. Our attorney said, you don't understand how unusual it is, because it was a big deal. My brother in his, you know, in his naval uniform coming into. And this is what the attorney said to us. You don't understand. With the three of us, there's more education in this room right now than there is for all the criminal trials combined for a year. What are we doing? Where are we not with our educations, right? So you might think this just happens. This is a sad thing, but it's also a hopeful thing because, I guess I'm not done with the sad part yet. 2015 study, psychological science. This does not just happen to other people who are not like us, right? This was a study Sean Porter did that said most of us are susceptible to this kind of intense persuasion. And this was the first study that attempted to generate false memories or false, you know, and with suggestive memory retrieval techniques of college students. In this study, 70% of participants were classified as, were induced to doubt themselves and think, maybe I did hit a guy in a parking lot with my car and I just did not, you know. I mean, they weren't like murderers, but they were like, did you, you know, hit a car in that parking lot? There are folks who study, I'm a communication studies person, there are folks who study, even Elizabeth Loftus does some amazing work with language and persuasion. So if I said, did you see a broken headlight? Or did you see the broken headlight? These folks, they see it a lot more often. If I change the word a to the, did you see a broken headlight? Did you see the broken headlight? Language is super powerful. And we are all susceptible to persuasion. So I say this not to scare my students when I talked about this, but to be like, we better all be afraid. And there's lots of things that we can do. Lots of justice-focused organizations. But basically, and I can get, I mean, there's resource after resource. But after all of this, for me, I want to change all kinds of things. Like, my county has the highest phone rates. Like, you know, I would pay $100 to talk to my daughter for 20 minutes. Highest in the state of Illinois. The state of Illinois has low rates, but the county, Rock Island County, had really the highest rates. I mean, so there's all of these things that makes it hard to compare. But I can't do all the things. I'm not a lawyer. I can't fight Securus, you know, tech organizations. I'm not a judge. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a tech. I'm a business person. I'm an educator. So, after healing and knowing that my daughter would be in prison, and probably, and there's some estimates, but how do you know how many people in prison are innocent? The Innocence Project says maybe 5% of people who are incarcerated are truly innocent. I don't really know, and I've started to care less. We have 2.2 million people. 1 out of 10 American children has had a parent incarcerated. A parent.
1 in 10?
1 in 10. 1 in 10 American children has experienced parental incarceration. Are those kids going to go to college? Are they going to, I mean, the ripple of the devastating, you don't have, I mean, an earner is gone, a parent is gone, the, you know, whatever, if you don't have, anyway, kids desperately need support through this. I've been meeting some incredible people, Girl Scouts behind bars. There are Girl Scout, there are leaders who have Girl Scout organizations, Boy Scout organizations for kids with parents who are incarcerated. We need more of that because it is a taboo. People don't want to say, I have a loved one in prison. Because we other, we say prisoner, as if it's somebody not really worthy of human dignity. So in any event, I'm an educator, so I can't write all of these things, but I can go and volunteer in my prison. So that's what I do. So I do some non-credit-bearing classes at a local prison, and working on, with the support of my, sorry, I didn't mean it in there. There. With the support of my college, that's my sabbatical focus, is that I'm trying to build a higher ed in prison program. Because that's who I am. That's what I can do. There are tons. tons of things. One, you can learn more, right? You don't have to go out and fight. You don't have to go into prisons. It's not everybody's thing. But you might read behind the headlines sometimes. You might talk about it. Watch Ava DuVernay's When They See Us. Sure, people lie, and, you know, but people didn't believe me until they saw the video of my daughter, and that's why I'm really sad I didn't think to bring the DVD with me, but I don't carry it around. But very often, people are like, oh, you're just a hysterical mom, right? Or they'll, you know, that was one of the hardest things for me is that people didn't believe me. They didn't believe that people confessed to things they didn't do. I hope you're convinced by now that they do. So grateful that you came. And what else can I, I've kept you a long time. What do you want to talk about? Offer? What brought you here? What?
So when someone is exonerated, do they then go try and find out who actually committed the crime?
15-month-old
toddler. So nobody knows who harmed that baby.
And that baby got harmed again. Yeah. No. It's done. Case closed. Hi, James.
It just strikes me that the website that you showed from the Read Technique, the metrics that they're using for determining what is success, right?
That's right.
From the perspective of the interrogator.
Yep.
I mean, that's a perverse incentive, an institutionally defined how many cases are you claiming. Like, what would it look like? I mean, what would it look like to change that metric of success? Like, what would it look like to give better motivation or incentives to those interrogators that aren't complicated
yes.
to be clear.
I'm with you 100%.
What would it look like to, because it'd be a lot harder, right?
It would be harder. It might take longer, mm-hmm. but maybe not. Mm-hmm. This is not only a United States of America problem. But it's especially a United States of America problem. But it's not like other countries haven't. They have systems and they have processes in place. In fact, we've learned from the UK. We've learned from other countries on the interrogation techniques. There's techniques that don't allow, that actually require officers to gather information, require it, and you can't lie to them. You can't lie to people. I mean, that would go a long way in engendering trust in communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons why people might not trust police officers, and we're in a very difficult time right now. Because I have multiple students who want to be police officers, and I'm like, so glad. And, you know, but it's also a really hard time in this country right now because of so much distrust. Well, there's a reason for the distrust. And in many cases, a lot of folks who grew up in middle-class communities might not know that, you know, for decades, well, the war on drugs meant police could stop you, well, stop and frisk is, mm-hmm. I can show you so many things. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have to have cause to pick you up and take you. They did not have to have cause. Because if you, in the war on drugs, if you were outside in a neighborhood that was a designated drug zone, they could pick you up for being there without cause. Mm-hmm. Freddie Gray, I mean, Baltimore's in the news a lot for their, you know, policing, and similar to Chicago with really histories of some abuse and an incredible new state's attorney and other politicians who are working to exonerate people. And there are people who are doing work. But we have a lot of work to undo. The three strikes law, you know, that put people in like minimum of 10 years. You know, that was Clinton, President Bill Clinton, you know, signed a lot of legislation into play during this time of supposed super predators, you know, super predator children who were roaming the streets. I mean, we have horrifying narratives about gangs, and that people are really, truly scared. And there's violence. There's violence. I'm not saying there's not violence. And I'm not a prison abolitionist. But I'd pretty much probably, I mean, we're wrong if we think people in prison are irredeemable. I've met beautiful souls.
So do the police have a quota for how many confessions they have to get? I imagine that there are some police departments where you're pressured as a detective to get a confession.
I don't know if there's a quota for confessions.
Well, they're using this system.
Yeah. Well, it works.
Yeah. It sure does.
It was unusual that we got videotaped interrogations. We got all three. I have Brad's interrogation. I have Jennifer's interrogation. I have my daughter's. And to see them side by side, it's crazy, the difference. She decided it was either Dee or Jen, and then ended up being Dee. And in that interrogation, you see Jennifer going like, we had nothing to do. And Jennifer stood her ground, and my daughter just couldn't. She just didn't. That doesn't make you guilty of a violent crime. Yeah. Sobering, isn't it? So what brought some of you here?
So I just wanted to learn more about it.
Thank you for coming.
My mom works at the Federal Defender's Office in Des Moines. And so she works on a lot of cases as a paralegal. And just like hearing her experiences, it's like, it's very hard.
Yeah.
They get a lot of cases just like dismissed. And nothing, she barely goes to trial. She's worked there for over 10 years, and she's had to speak at one trial.
Oh my word. Wow. Wow. And that wasn't really up to her? Some of that wasn't, I mean,
yeah. But yeah, she's like worked on a couple of trials. But she's been there for a long time. They barely go to trial.
Yeah.
Maybe like once a year. Yeah. And she's only actually been like called to stand.
I'm sorry, the last part?
She's just been only called to stand like once.
Wow.
Wow.
You must have learned a lot from her. And we need good people in every part of the system. Thanks, Brunel.
Yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Okay.
I know we've talked before, but I'm a social work student, and I've taken a lot of classes on criminal justice, and it's something that really interests me, and it's a possible field I want to go into.
Yeah.
And this was just something that like really stood out to me, and I knew like right away that I wanted to come do it.
Well, thank you.
I saw Brian Stevenson briefly at Iowa City.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah.
He's the author of Just Mercy and like one of my heroes. And he's now so, so popular because of the book. Like we tried to get him to come to Augustana, but like he's got so many offers and he, you know, it's, you know, so I don't think we can afford him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good human being.
Have you ever thought about presenting this at like a public school, a high school?
Yes, I have. I haven't done it yet, but maybe I should think about it more.
I think I feel like even at my high school, like, this would be huge.
I will travel and do this anywhere.
Maybe not even just high school, but have you thought about, like, I mean, you do it at your college, obviously, but have you thought about giving a lecture at other colleges?
Yeah. And maybe you need to do it more. And so, I mean, there was a time where I couldn't speak. And the first time I did this was very hard. That was 2 years ago. And since then, we've done it several times, and like Dorothy and Jen are there and they take questions, and you know, and it's and if you see her in the room, then you, I mean, it has an impact. And she has given me permission, you know, even when she's not there, to do this talk. I will, now that I can, I will. I'll speak anywhere.
Seems like
invite me.
Your point, Lauren, like, I'm thinking about, you know, the civics education that, I mean, this is an important part of that, I think. When we do so much about what it means to be a good citizen,
yep.
but what it means to be a citizen within institutions like this, I think,
yeah,
really, really powerful. I mean, the simple message of just, like, you need to ask for a lawyer.
You need
yeah.
to,
oh,
yes.
Yeah. And knowing your rights.
Know your rights.
Yeah.
There's ACLU has these know your rights cards.
Mm-hmm.
And when I give this presentation, I try to bring them. I buy them from the ACLU and just hand them out. And it's like, you don't, you know, what you can do if you're in your car, if you're, you know, at a, like, different places, if, and you absolutely have the right as a citizen, you have the right. And I feel you have to say, I need a lawyer there. Doesn't mean you're not going to help. It just means that you won't necessarily be charged with it.
And I think people think that implicates some level of guilt. Oh, I don't need a lawyer. I'll tell them the truth.
That happens. That is absolutely what happens.
Right.
Yep.
And so that,
yeah.
To ask for a lawyer indicates that there's something I'm trying to
ask. Do not let that deter you. It will be used against you. Why? What do you have to hide? What do you, like, just, you know? And so just put your head down. I don't talk without a lawyer.
Yeah, that point that, like, it can never help you.
It
right?
will.
It's like, you're already free.
Never.
Like, you are right. So you can't get more
right.
than that.
What you say can and will be held against you.
Can and will be held against you. And, like, sometimes I'll start that little saying and everybody will be like, I can and will be held against you. But
you
don't think about what it means. It's intended to be used against you. What you say is intended to be used against you in this context. It's not information gathering.
And because they hold these people for so long, like, you start to, like, yeah, like, you...
You get confused.
You get confused.
You're tired.
Yeah, it's just...
You're young.
Ugh.
You're weak, or you don't get it.
You're in a room for hours at a time, just being like interrogated, and you don't know what to do.
And we all have a breaking point. I'm surprised that some of these young people have, you know, it took them 24 hours. But some of them, the young men, in when they see us, it took them hours and hours and hours and hours, like after 18 hours of, you know, interrogation with not being allowed to eat or not being allowed to sleep, because also preventing you from sleeping, right? I mean, there's over and over and over again. And it's not physical violence.
But then the people who are doing even worse things are just getting away.
Yeah. It's pretty sad. There are things being done about it. And even just knowing this and learning a little bit that you can more about it, talking about it. We all have spheres of influence, and it just didn't, you know, I did talk to a group of young men who were in Davenport. I did do that, but I haven't actually gone to high school, so it just hadn't really, so I'll think about that.
I think it would be, like, more impactful in places where, like college, not college, like a public place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Place
mm-hmm.
where you don't have to, like, pay
mm-hmm.
to be there.
Yeah.
There are places of privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm
trying to say. Oh, yeah.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so I talked to Davenport about it. I did talk at a conference. So there's this conference called the Prisoners Family Conference. And in Dallas, yeah. And that's where I met people who do Girl Scouts behind bars, and, like, all of these things that I never was aware of before. And I'm a socially conscious person. I knew about the things. I just didn't know. And now that's part of what I believe is now my calling. It is my calling now. And we are okay. my personal family is okay. Our country is not okay. This mass incarceration is not okay. It's preying on the innocent. I mean, it's preying on the innocent and the guilty. I guess. But again, I'm not worried about guilt so much anymore. I mean, it's a terrible problem. But now I'm going elsewhere with it. You know, because that's my sphere of influence is other than changing the legal system. It's working with people who get called by numbers, and somehow justice means time in a cage. Tell me what that's about. It's not restorative. There's nothing linking offenders, victims of crimes, and offenders with the outcome. It's time in a cage. Yeah.
Did I catch that? You said you can just ask your police station, like, what type of interrogation?
You absolutely can. Ask them, when people are interrogated, do you use the Reed technique of interrogation? And if the answer is yes, many police departments are changing that now. Will you consider changing it? Mm-hmm. And if you search for it, you begin to find, once you know what it is, you can begin to find it, that can become an avenue of advocacy. I took the DVD of my daughter to my representative, my congressional representative, and left it. She wasn't there. I took it to her office, and I basically extracted a promise from her secretary. Mm-hmm. It's 20 minutes. Will she watch this? I haven't followed up yet, but I did do that. And if you want the DVD, if you want the transcripts, I have the transcripts. I share them. I will share them. If you want to do a rhetorical analysis of three confessions as a senior project or whatever, I will share them.
Thank you,
Sharon. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you so much for coming.